It is The Morning Show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. The business of artificial snow is all around us as Wisconsin winters become less predictable. Snow even flies as an entrepreneurial proposition on a recent episode of ABC's Shark Tank with contestant Jonathan Dusing of Lionel Lakes, Minnesota.
When it snows, it can come down like a blizzard. But for those who don't live in a winter climate or simply love to play with snow, I have the perfect solution with Snow in Seconds.
As we discuss snowmaking, call in with a question. Share comments, 800-642-1234. Email ideas at WPR.org. Yuri Gusev is executive director of the Madison-based nonprofit Central Cross Country. That's a governing body for cross-country skiing across 10 states. Yuri, welcome to the Ideas Network.
Hello, good morning.
Good morning. Ann Rendell with us as well, chairperson for Lapham Peak Friends Snowmaking at the Lapham Peak unit of the Kettle Moraine State Forest near Delafield. Ann, welcome.
It's great to be here. Thanks.
Yes, rounding us out, Jim Engel, executive director of Skiing Wisconsin, Inc., an association for downhill ski areas in the state. Jim, welcome.
Welcome. Thank you. I'm pleased to be here.
Jim, let's start with you. Snowmaking equipment is used on downhill ski areas across the state. Why do these recreation areas make snow rather than rely on the naturally occurring snow?
Well, quite simply, we don't get enough natural snow in Wisconsin to operate ski areas. It takes a lot of snow to ski on and to groom, and there's just not enough in Wisconsin to operate. And it doesn't come at the right time. You can see that the weather is warm now and there is no natural snow on the ground. And yet all of the ski areas are open almost 100% already, simply due to the snowmaking processes that they were able to start in late November.
Yes. How much can a season expand through snowmaking operations?
Well, typically a season in Wisconsin is close to 100 days, and plus or minus a little bit, depending on the temperatures. Usually at the beginning of the season, that's when you would expand the number of days by getting cold weather early enough in the season to make snow and get operating
that quickly. Plus or minus 100 days. And Yuri, in late November, you started making snow and grooming a short loop for cross-country skiing at the CXC Outdoor Center in Middleton. What conditions are needed to make snow for cross-country skiers?
It's similar as downhill. It's just a little bit different. I mean, we make snow on the trail, some open area, and then in the trail. So we're a little bit maybe more complex because we and a narrow trail goes and following the terrain. So there's a little bit different approach.
Yes, a narrow trail. You really have to aim correctly to ensure that the artificial snow is getting to the place you need it on these trails.
And we're relying on the wind. Yeah. Ah. So, I mean, not just aiming, it's the wind. So there's that equation as well.
And humidity, I would imagine, temperatures all factoring into what is possible.
Correct. Yeah, that's there's a lot of planning involved.
So, Anne, turning to you and the snow guns at Lapham Peak State Park, the same ones used at downhill ski areas. How different is snowmaking for what you're doing in cross-country skiing versus downhill?
Yeah, our cross-country is a little bit different. Like Yuri said, we have to get the snow land on a small area, the trail. If we were working, and we do have also one open field where we make snow, and that's got a lot more flexibility. Like last night, some of our volunteers were working last night operating the snow guns out at Lapham Peak, and in the evening it was really windy, so that requires a lot of frequent checking of the guns and reassessing of exactly which angle you want them at and how high you want the gun to point the mist that's coming out of the gun, so that how long it affects how long this mist has to fall to the ground, because during that time it's got to turn into snow And so the temperatures have to be cold enough and the wind has to let it go onto the trail where we want it. So it's a process that our snow gun operators who are volunteers at LAPM, it takes a few years to learn all the ins and outs of doing this sort of thing.
Sharpen up on those physics. What is the volunteer contingency for Lapham Peak? How can you talk about the volunteerism?
Yeah, thanks for bringing that up, because I really think it's real important. The snowmaking at Lapham Peak is volunteer driven. It's driven by both volunteers and donors. We use the Wisconsin DNR property, and truly in the start in 2004, 2005, it was the Wisconsin DNR staff at Lapham that encouraged us to, to go ahead and get the snowmaking started. In 1988, Bob Sandless had donated lights. He was the owner of a retail business called Kittle Marine Sports, which was located near there at Highway 83 and I-94. And he was closing Heritage Ridge, which had been a Nordic ski area that he ran for some years. And he donated the lights to the Friends of Lapham Peak. A volunteer cadre of folks put those lights up at Lapham Peak on the trails. And we've been skiing under those lights ever since. And then in 2004, 2005, the initiative got started for making snow, and we've gradually increased infrastructure, the length of trail covered by snow over the years as we've had donations come in to pay for it and volunteers to make it happen.
So it's light snow in action there. And Ann Rendell from Lapham Peak Friends, Jim Engel is here from Skiing Wisconsin, Yuri Gusev from Central Cross Country. You can join in on snowmaking. Questions and comments, 800-642-1234. Jim, where do ski hill operators typically get their water to make this snow?
Well, that varies. It depends on where they're located and where the water source is. In some cases, there's rivers or creeks that flow right across the bottom of their ski area, and they borrow the water from the rivers and make snow. And of course, it melts and returns to the rivers in the spring. Others have reservoirs that are closer to the skiing facility where they pump water from, and some will pump from a river into the reservoir, let it cool, and then use it from the reservoir up onto the hill. Others will maybe fill their reservoirs with spring water that is naturally occurring, or even some well water that would enter into their own snowmaking reservoir and then through cool before it goes pumped up onto the hill for snowmaking.
So is the equipment like electric or diesel powered? I'm thinking about the power it would take to get this snow to where it needs to be, like way up on a hill.
Well, it does take some power to move the water up 300 or 400 feet in the on top of the slope. And that's with usually an electric water pump. That takes a lot of water at a high pressure that can be then used on the slopes through hydrants and onto the snow guns. So there is some electric power that is needed for the start of the process to get the water to move up the hill so that it can be blown into snow.
Erie, the CXC Outdoor Center is on land leased from the city of Middleton, and your water pumped from underground. Do you have concerns about water use to provide skiable conditions?
No, it's not ideal because water coming from the ground is a little bit warmer, so we don't have cooling of the water right now, but there's potential to add a cooling system as well. So we don't have really a problem with the making snow. We always made snow from hydrant or a well in the past. So when we made snow at Elva Park, we just used a fire hydrant at the park for snowmaking. Again, it makes a little bit wet, but at the right temperatures, I know our experiences, it doesn't make a much difference.
Yuri Gusev is executive director and athletic director for the Cross Country Skiing Governing Body Central Cross Country. Jim Engel with us leads the Association for the Downhill Ski Industry, Skiing Wisconsin, Inc., And Ann Rendell is here, chairs the Lapham Peak Friends snowmaking efforts. Call in with a question. You can share comments, 800-642-1234. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. You're listening to The Morning Show on the Ideas Network. It is The Morning Show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. We examine efforts to make snow artificially from water in Wisconsin as Governor Tony Evers' administration announces a record $9.8 billion was pumped into the economy last year from outdoor recreation. Be part of this discussion about making the white stuff. Call in with a question. Share your views. 800-642-1234. Email ideas at WPR.org. Jim Engel is with us, Executive Director of Skiing Wisconsin, Inc. Yuri Gusev is Executive Director for Central Cross Country. And Ann Rendell is Chair for Lapham Peak Friends Snowmaking. So, Ann, what is the traffic like for the trails of human-made snow at Lapham Peak? How many people use it?
We have a lot of people using our trail. The DNR keeps track of the number of cars coming into the park each day and over the months. And their number tip, and they estimate there's about two and a half people per car. And their estimate is that we have about 50,000 people coming to Lapham every month of the year, all 12 months. And that number goes up in the winter with our man-made snow loops. As you can imagine, with Lapham being down in the southeastern part of the state near Delafield, Wisconsin, which is about a half hour west of Milwaukee, we are near the biggest population center in the state, which is Milwaukee. And so there's a lot of people who find Lapham handy. It's a lot less driving than going all the way up north. So that gets us our 60,000 plus people in January skiing around on our snow and other activities. There's snowshoeing on other parts of the park when the snow has come from the sky. And there's plenty of hiking and dog walking and other activities that go on at Lapham as well.
Yuri, I understand that CXC Outdoor Center really is engaged on social media to explain the grooming of ski trails and when it is done. How much do local skiers demand those types of updates?
Quite often. I mean, everybody is looking for updates on conditions for sure, because they plan to come and ski with a family or individually before work or after work. So knowing the conditions, it becomes a very common question to us. And we try to groom every day. We also rely on the volunteers for snowmaking and grooming heavily. So, and sometimes it becomes challenging to groom, depends on the weather. We try to, again, keep skiers informed what we can or cannot do.
Who makes the decision on what conditions are like? Because conditions to one skier may be very different to how another skier would describe it.
Yeah, well, usually groomers and conditions also change dramatically, can change during the day. A lot of people try to come in the morning when the trails are just perfectly groomed, and depends on the weather. A trail can break up pretty quickly, and when it's above freezing. So conditions can be at 8 o'clock very different. It could be perfect at 8 o'clock. It could be pretty challenging at 10 a.m. or 12 a.m. when it warms up. And sometimes we try to come back in the lunch hour, or at least after lunch hour, when it's not as busy, and freshen up a little bit with grooming as well. And when we need to close the trail, for instance, if it's raining outside or if it's too icy and we can't work, it's going to take us a while to work on the trail. So we definitely then close the trail for safety and the preserve the snow as well.
And Jim, you know, additives derived from bacteria are sometimes used to make artificial snow, the additives helping form ice crystals. Should people be concerned about the effects of these additives on the environment or human health?
No, not at all. Those are naturally occurring additives that are treated, and it just adds a dust particle to the water. And that becomes like a nucleus around which the snow flake can form. So it just raises the water temp, raises the freezing point of the snow particle so that it can freeze and become snow at a higher temperature. It's more like a dust than anything else, a biological natural dust.
We're talking about snowmaking. Jim Engel there from Skiing Wisconsin, Ann Rendell from Lapham Peak Friends, and Yuri Gusa from Central Cross Country. You can join in. Questions and comments, 800-642-1234. Let's go to Amy in Port Wing. Amy, hi.
Hi there. So I'm an avid cross-country skier, and actually I moved from Massachusetts to Wisconsin in the 80s. Because of snow. I was looking for snow. But I'm also really concerned about the climate. So how much energy and water do you use for making the snow, and what is the carbon footprint? You know, the lack of snow is like a biofeedback machine showing us that there is a problem in our climate. So by just reaching for fossil fuels and making snow, I think there could be a problem with that.
Amy, thank you for the call. And can you field that?
Yeah, I think it's a great question. It's something that all of us making snow wrestle with, I think, all over Wisconsin for sure, and farther as well. One of the things I always say to this is it's true, we do use up a fair amount of energy. The water we don't really use up. I mean, we use it temporarily, and then, as Jim said before, it goes back into the water supply in the area. And we do use a lot less water than a golf course, for instance, in a year. The golf course is used way, like 10 times more. I don't know the exact number, but a lot more water. Theirs rolls back into the water supply too. And then the electricity that we use for the pumps to move the water and for the guns to get the mist made is significant electricity. I think the benefits of outdoor recreation are huge. Getting people out onto the snow smiling in the winter is a tremendous benefit to the entire community. And so we have to weigh that against our concerns of using energy to make that happen. And the way things work at Lapham, we have this dedicated group of, you know, we've had 650 donations over the years since 2004, 2005, when we started making snow. 650 discrete donors. Many of those people have donated every year. But that group of people is using the snow and telling their friends and encouraging other people to come out and have fun in the winter. And to me, the outdoor recreational benefits that everybody who uses the snow gets outweighs the worries about the energy use. But I do think it's something we have to keep in mind as we proceed out there having our smiles and getting our exercise.
Yuri, how do you consider climate change? I mean, is it a challenge to the future of the ski industry as we find the warming temperatures mean less snowfall in regions and more abnormal weather patterns?
Yeah, it's definitely challenging. But at the same time, snowmaking is really, that's what preserving participation in this sport as well. Just past two weekends, we had our races, biggest regional races. One was in Duluth and one was in Cable, Wisconsin. Both had close to 500 youth competing. And if not for snowmaking, those events wouldn't happen. It also affects the industry as well. with retail, especially. But what we're learning also, the more areas with snowmaking that offer consistent snow coverage and grooming, regardless of the weather or there is snow on the ground or not, more people actually then commit to cross-country skiing and outdoor recreation because they know about this consistency. In many times, I compare cross-country skiing and snowmaking is like a swimming pool. You know, you can always guarantee there is water in the pool and it's going to be warm and you're going to, you know, it's going to be there. So I think that's kind of in the direction we're going with snowmaking. And even if you look in Scandinavia, most of the places in Scandinavia have been making snow for a long time already.
Let's pause right there as we hear from people connected to Wisconsin's snow-dependent recreational activities. And you can share. Call in with a question, 800-642-1234. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. You're listening to The Morning Show here on the Ideas Network. It is The Morning Show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. We explore snowmaking operations in Wisconsin as the impacts of climate change and warming winters could make artificial snow more critical for the skiing community. Be part of the conversation. Call in with a question. Add your perspective. 800-642-1234. Email ideas at WPR.org. Our panel consists of Yuri Gusev, Executive Director of Central Cross Country, a governing body for cross country skiing in 10 states. Anne Rendell is chair for Lapham Peak Friends Snowmaking Committee at the Lapham Peak unit of the Kettle Moraine State Forest. And Jim Engel is here, lead Skiing Wisconsin Inc. That's an association for downhill ski areas in the state. Let's go to Nancy in Milwaukee with a question. Nancy, hi.
Hello. I have often wondered about these industries that use a lot of water, such as a water park or these ski industries, because often in the summer we will hear announcements on public radio that farmers are worried about their crops because we haven't had enough rain. And because you, especially for ski making downhill type activities, when the spring comes and the snow melts and runs downhill, it may not go back into the ground in exactly the same place it came from. So my question to you is, where are you getting your water from? And have you heard, any of you, that in your surrounding areas, farmers have had to dig deeper wells at great expense because your drawing of water from close to where their farms are is causing their wells to be further depleted?
Nancy, thank you for that question. Jim, to you, how do ski hills deal with runoff and erosion?
Well, the ski hills take care to make sure that in the spring that the water is channeled into the same areas where we got it from. Most of the areas have the water run off into the from their ski hills back into their own snowmaking reservoirs. And then as we get rainfall, those reservoirs fill up. Sometimes they overflow into the creek systems that are surrounding the ski area, and that goes back into the water table in the surrounding, or the area surrounding the ski areas. So I think we mentioned that we really just borrow the water and it goes back into the water table in the spring when it melts.
And how do you direct that runoff and the melt come spring and ensuring that water is returned to the water table?
At Lapham, that's what it does. We don't have a stream, but we do pump water from a well. And then have it sitting, and we pump it up into a pond so it can get colder. Because to make the snow, it's most efficient to have the water colder than it is when it's down deep in the ground, way below the frost line. So we cool it in the pond. And then in the spring, the water, the snow melts just like the snow from the sky would at Lapham. It melts and trickles into the pathway that the water flows from Lapham, which is not, I mean, it's not a big stream. It would just be the usual way that runoff in those fields would go. Lapham was all farms before it became Lapham in the 1980s, and before it became a state park. So when we started making snow, we did report every year to the county regarding our water use, and there hasn't been any detectable impact on any of the other wells in the area. According to the evaluations by the county and the DNR of that question.
Nancy, thank you for the call. Yuri, I understand that snowmaking and grooming at CXC Outdoor Center is done almost daily. How well do your skiers you serve understand the amount of work that goes into preparing the trails and maintaining them for skiing?
Some understand. And probably not. So it is, we have different type of equipment also to groom for different conditions. We try to do the best we can to make it cost effective and time effective as well. But it is not simple as well for groomers. I mean, most of the groomers have experience long been grooming for a long time and have a lot of experience. So it's easy to drive the snow grooming equipment, but it's not easy to groom it. Mm-hmm. That's how I would say.
Jim, I'm wondering, you know, as Yuri talks about cost effective and time effective and the equipment that it takes, you have some figures from 2021-2022 downhill skiing and snowboarding season estimating 2 million visits to Wisconsin ski hills, generating $247 million. How much do ski hill operators invest in updating their snowmaking equipment?
Well, it's a constant process. The ski area operators are all sustainable conscious because they want to run as efficient as they can. And the equipment that is available today is much more efficient than it was 20 or 30 years ago. So as the ski areas invest in their operation to make snow and to groom their snow, they're doing so with efficiency in mind so that their costs of operation are less and less, and then they can keep the cost of their lift tickets down.
How is equipment much more efficient? Can you give us an example?
Certainly. Some of the grooming equipment now has much more efficient diesel engines that produce less emissions out. So those are much more efficient. The electric motors that are on all of the snowmaking machines are variable speed drives and which require less horsepower. So they're more efficient. So they're using less electricity than they used to because the snow guns are much more efficient.
Jim Engel with Skiing Wisconsin, Yuri Gusev from Central Cross Country, and Rendell from Lapham Peak Friends as we talk about snowmaking, all aspects of it. Call in questions and comments, 800-642-1234. John in Menominee, Michigan. Hi, John. Go ahead.
Good morning. I wanted to indicate now, I remember, a previous caller who had talked about and begin to raise the idea of climate change. But in reference to your the previous speaker, yeah, everything is more efficient. And with efficiency comes expense. You know, the simple machines back in the 60s and 70s were not too efficient, but energy was pretty cheap then too. What needs to be embraced here in the future is the fact that climate change not only has its cost generations, but it also entails a shorter skiing season. I know a lot of areas are lucky if they can make that 100-day threshold, whether you're talking about cross-country or downhill. So what's happening is if you've got a shorter season, you have less chance to recoup the expenses of making snow. So that, obviously, that's got to result in higher lift ticket prices and everything that goes along with the potential to generate income. Now, I would also indicate, too, that one of the big pluses, if you can call it that, one of the big pluses that I have seen at the areas I've been is that COVID was a big boost. It encouraged people to, you know, get outdoors, be active and things like that. So we've seen a little bump here in the population, and hopefully that's going to turn into, whether it's downhill or cross country, that'll turn into, we hope, lifelong skiers.
John, thank you for the call. And Yuri, I want you to respond first. What comes up for you when you hear John's comments?
I would say, you know, it's 100 days is definitely challenging. It could be, but I think it's realistic for most of the places because typically we can start making snow right around Thanksgiving or before, and the amount of snow we can make, it gets us through early part of the March. And also with snowmaking, I think the nice part about snowmaking, the snow that comes out of the snow snow machines is a lot more dense, and it doesn't melt as fast as a natural snow, and it's a lot easier to work with it and push it in the places if, in case if we have warm temperature and rain and sections of the trails get damaged. So we can actually plan when we make snow, we can plan to repair the trail. So it's manageable, but it definitely can affect the cost of the trail passes. And we are very sensitive about it to make sure that everybody can afford to buy a trail pass. And so we can be as efficient as we can in snowmaking and grooming and provide those best opportunities.
And I'm going to jump in. And Jim, I'm wondering how, when you talk with the ski hills, how are they grappling with these economic conditions at the intersection of climate change and a shorter season?
Well, I agree with both of the cross-country people. They said this business is complex, and it is. Because we're all in the business of creating wholesome recreation for families. And we have to balance all of those factors that we talked about. We need to balance the cost of production of the snow. We need to balance the weather as that changes. And they're a tenacious group of area operators that still need to make money so that they can survive, and they still want to keep the costs affordable for families for this wholesome recreation. So it's a balancing act in terms of purchasing equipment with the capital that they have, making sure that the equipment that they're using to replace is much more efficient, so it's more cost effective, so that the season that we end up with, whether it's a longer season being you know, a colder winter, or a shorter season like we may have this year with a warmer December, they can still manage to run efficiently and keep the areas open for these families that are coming.
Jim Engel, Executive Director of the Downhill Industry Group Skiing Wisconsin. Yuri Gusev with us, Executive Director of Central Cross Country. That's a group promoting cross-country skiing in a 10-state region. And Ann Rendell with us, Chairperson of Lapham Peak Friends Snowmaking. You can call in with a question. Share thoughts, 800-642-1234. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. You're listening to The Morning Show on the Ideas Network. It is the morning show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. Weather is a critical factor to snow creation, whether it be natural or human-made. And we get insights on making artificial snow in Wisconsin and future prospects for skiing in our state. Be part of this. Call in with a question. Add views at 800-642-1234. Email ideas at WPR.org. Yuri Gusev is executive director of the Madison nonprofit Central Cross Country. Jim Engel, executive director of Skiing Wisconsin, Inc. It's an association for downhill ski areas. And Ann Rendell is chairperson for Lapham Peak Friends Snowmaking Committee. And when you try to do the, or in terms of the grooming, how does the grooming at Lapham Peak accommodate both skate skiers and classic skiers?
Good question. We have 1.5 miles of trail that's covered with man-made snow. And for the last few seasons, that's been the main place where our skiing happens. The groomers, we have three groomers who run our snowcat. And then the Wisconsin DNR also has some equipment that the park staff run at times for the grooming. So it's a complex thing. All of our volunteer groomers in the snowcat are also skiers, so they're used to thinking about what it's like when they're on it. And we have skiers who want to do both classic and skate styles of skiing. The classic style is the one where people put their skis in the tracks, the indentations down into the surface of the snow, and can keep their skis parallel as they move forward. And the skate requires a flat surface where the skis can slide easily off to the side, right side, left side, right side, left side with each stroke. That's the skating motion, right? So we have to accommodate both in our 1.5 miles of snow.
So, you know, what does the snowcat do? What is that role?
Multiple purpose in the early season, like now, it is spreading out the whales. We call them whales because when the snow gun makes a pile of snow, it's in a big shape like a whale that swims in the ocean. And the groomers need to use the heavy machine to move that, to spread that snow out so it's flat on top so we can ski on it. We put up markers in the fall to mark the 24-inch depth because our goal at Lapham is to try to have the snow be 24 inches deep after it's been spread out with the snowcat. And then each night when it gets cold, at the cold temperature of the day, is the best time to have the grooming machine go out and chew up the top, we call it, to make the top unfrozen, basically, or to pulverize it into small little, like, snow cone kind of snow so that it can get a surface on it that's really good for our skis to glide over.
Thank you for that explanation. Appreciate it. Jenny sent us a question by email. Jenny wondering, how can people find out where all of the ski trails are that actually make snow? And how do we find out what the conditions are at any given point in time? What are your tips? Jenny asks. And Yuri, I'm going to have you field that.
I'm not sure there's a one place that shows only trails with snowmaking capacity, but there's a website called skiingski.com. So that has a very wide, most of the ski trails send reports there. Mm-hmm. I think that's maybe the best resource, or you can also probably just save. There's not many of them trails that makes snow for cross-country skiing in the state, and just check on the Facebook or their trail reports. I think there's only 5 or 6 places in the state that make snow, so it's not many.
And I'm seeing here, our producer says, a comprehensive site for Nordic ski trail conditions is skinnyski.com, skinnyski.com. So thank you for that. Let's go to Karen in Monona. Karen, what's on your mind? Hi, Karen. Can you hear us? I don't think Karen is here, but I can convey what Karen wants to know, Jim, and is wondering, are there any other chemicals that are put into the snow, the human-made snow, in order to preserve the snow?
No, water will freeze and melt as a temperature. The chemicals are not, we don't add chemicals to the snowmaking system.
And how are downhill ski areas in Wisconsin groomed to keep the mix of machine-made snow and natural snow fresh?
Well, I agree with what Ann said about the grooming tractor. We have the ski hills are all have their own grooming tractors that push the snow in the beginning off of the piles that are made by the snowmaking machines and then smooth it out with a giant garden rototiller on the back of the snowmaking machine. That's 16, 18 feet wide. And then behind that fluffed up surface, there's a flat comb, a corduroy comb that flattens the surface and freshens the surface every day. Mm-hmm. So as the skiers track up the snow and as the weather changes and throughout the day, every night the ski areas will fluff up the surface with these grooming tractors and smooth it out with the combs that are behind that and make the skiers a fresh soft surface for the top 4 inches or 5 inches of the snow.
I wonder, Yuri, as you get many different types of groups from young kids to, veteran skiers, do you groom based on who might be racing or using the trails at all?
Yes, and we also would groom different trails and try to, with the limited trail we have with snowmaking, we also notify public when groups are coming, so they're aware that trail will be busy at those times, especially when we have youth groups. And then if we have special groups visiting our venue, let's just say we have a group with disabled veterans, so we'll mark specific section of the trail and again notify public that that area is used by that group. In terms of grooming, we definitely put more classic tracks if there are beginner groups, like, for example, if a community center comes or a school. So they would be using more classic tracks versus skating, and because it's just easier to learn classic skiing. And some groups have, or schools have, classic equipment to ski in the classic tracks. So, and maybe another example could be if there's a local middle school or high school team or club comes with kids that already have experience and they into racing or into training. So then we groom, we'll groom the trail that has a little bit more variety to it.
Adjust accordingly. Yes. Thank you all for joining us. Yuri Gusev, Executive Director of the Madison Nonprofit Central Cross Country. Ann Rendell, Chair for Lapham Peak Friends Snowmaking Committee at the Lapham Peak Unit of Kettle Moraine State Forest. And Jim Engel, Executive Director of Skiing Wisconsin. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. You're listening to The Morning Show here on the Ideas Network.